You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up on Food Friday, our guests say that every dish should be prepared with respect, purity, and tranquility. We'll hear stories and recipes from a Vietnamese family kitchen.
Right now, a cure for cancer has been the medical holy grail for many years. Our knowledge, understanding, and available treatments have increased a lot, but there's still a long way to go.
We recently learned about a new concentrated effort for finding a cure for cancer. A cancer moonshot is what the White House has called it, after the concerted effort that put a human being into space.
Our next guest thinks that there are answers to be found by studying cancer in the animal world and learning how different species develop and fight cancer.
Dr. James Welsh is a medical director of radiation oncology at the Stritch School of Medicine at Loyola University Chicago, and he's the author of the new book, Sharks Get Cancer, Mole Rats Don't, How Animals Could Hold the Key to Unlocking Cancer Immunity in Humans, and he'll be at a Room of One's Own bookstore in Madison this Sunday, June 5th at 2 o'clock. Dr. Welsh, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
So you want to look at animals to get a better handle on the potential to fight cancer in humans. Why look to the animal kingdom?
Well, there are some very interesting observations in the animal kingdom that I believe could be very instructive when it comes to human clinical cancer care. One example that really stood out was the fact that there are contagious cancers in certain animals. And contagious cancers just shouldn't be, because the immune system should prevent any cancer from being transplanted from one animal to another in the first place. But in dogs, there is a contagious cancer that initially progresses and then subsequently regresses in most cases. That subsequent regression is very, very intriguing because, after all, that type of regression is what we would like to see happen for our human cancer patients. How is it that the dog is undergoing that spontaneous regression? And is there anything that we can learn from studying that example? So that's really what got me going.
Well, right in drawing from the title of your book, Naked Mole Rats, most of us probably haven't seen one, and that's for the best. They're not the most attractive critters, but they appear to be immune to cancer. What do we know about why that is and how we could eventually maybe draw from that to treat cancer or prevent it in humans?
Very interesting. Naked mole rats do seem to be largely impervious to cancer. And I have to explain that although the title of my book is Sharks Get Cancer, Mole Rats Don't, after it was published, only maybe a week or two later, it was discovered that a couple of mole rats did wind up getting cancer.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not 100%, they're not 100% immune to cancer. But they are very, very resistant to malignant disease. The way they do it is through an interesting biochemical phenomenon wherein their cells are physically spaced a bit further from each other than in other animals, and they tend to be less likely to clump together, and cells that are less likely to clump are less likely to get malignancies down the road. Additionally, there are some other mechanisms that make them resistant to cancer as well. But it's not the naked mole rat that seems to be the one that's going to provide a clue to human cancer care. It's the blind mole rat, because in the blind mole rat, there is an immune mechanism, meaning that the immune system wakes up whenever there are malignant cells and causes those malignant cells to die. And that's very important. And I think it's something that maybe we could replicate in human cancer patients.
Well, and you also write about mice. Apparently, in some mice, it's possible to activate a cancer-fighting gene, which can trigger a big immune response, which can fight the cancer. And it's been pretty successful in some trials. What does that look like in humans?
Well, so far that hasn't gotten to the stage where we can really say anything definitive about the efficacy in people yet. But one of the most amazing observations I've ever come across was when I was studying certain mice that seemed to be impervious to a specific type of cancer. These mice were being studied for liver and lipid metabolism studies, and one of the mice just wasn't getting the cancer that it was expected to get when it was injected with these certain cells. They increased the dose. They quadrupled it, increased it 100-fold, 1,000-fold, and introduced millions of cells that should have guaranteed that that mouse would have succumbed to the cancer. It didn't. That cancer-resistant mouse was bred and subsequently became nicknamed Mighty Mouse. Hmm. The amazing thing was that a blood transfusion from Mighty Mouse would make other mice resistant to cancer, and some mice that had this advanced cancer could get a blood transfusion from Mighty Mouse and be cured. Astonishing. That is something that I wish we could apply for people, and I think there is the potential for that.
Well, and speaking of astonishing, you've had a couple of patients who you write about who had terminal cancer treated with radiation, maybe more for palliative purposes, and it ended up curing them. Could you talk about that?
Sure. That is perhaps what got me really interested in the immunological mechanisms underlying cancer in the first place. I've had a couple of patients with advanced terminal metastatic cancer who required radiation therapy to relieve symptoms. The radiation therapy was expected to do nothing more than relieve symptoms, but it did do a lot more than relieve symptoms. In one case of a young man with advanced melanoma that had spread to his liver, lungs, and to his bones, I treated one of the bones and all of his cancer and all the other bones, all the liver lesions, all the lung lesions, and all his lymph nodes spontaneously regressed and stayed away. And that was an amazing observation called the abscopal effect. This was over 15 years ago, and there wasn't a whole lot of attention being paid to the abscopal effect, but obviously I was tremendously influenced by it, and I've been seeking an answer to that ever since, and also seeking to replicate it ever since. Today, the good news is that there are physicians and clinics that are intentionally replicating abscopal effects with some of the newer agents combined with radiation therapy.
And is it working in the almost miraculous way that you saw it work in your patient?
It's certainly not 100%, but there is a lot more conversation about the abscopal effect today than 15 or 20 years ago. So while it's not mainstream, it is something that people are seeing, believing, and paying attention to, and in some cases, replicating in the clinic.
We're talking with Dr. James Welsh right now from the Stritch School of Medicine at Loyola University Chicago. He's the author of the book Sharks Get Cancer, Mole Rats Don't, and he'll be speaking about that book at a Room of One's Own bookstore in Madison this Sunday at 2 o'clock. And let's talk a little bit about immunotherapy. Now, this is something that cancer research had delved into a bit and, in a sense, put back on the shelf in favor of other things. Now it's back. It's one of the more exciting areas, avenues for cancer research right now. What do we know about the potential of immunotherapy and the channels that science is going down right now?
Well, I have to admit that, frankly, I'm very excited about the renaissance in cancer immunotherapy. A lot of my colleagues were and remain skeptical, but that's because the immunotherapy that was tried 15, 20, 30 years ago was designed specifically to strengthen the soldiers of the immune system. We didn't understand that there were regulatory cells in the immune system that held the soldiers back, and the immunotherapy way back then strengthened the soldiers that could kill the cancer, but also strengthened the regulators that held the soldiers back. So we didn't understand that until recently. Today, the immunotherapy is designed at decreasing the potency of the regulators, the cells that hold the soldiers back. If we decrease the strength of these regulators, the strengthened army of immune cell soldiers can do what it's supposed to do, namely eradicate the cancer. We are seeing this happen with some of these new drugs called checkpoint inhibitors. And the checkpoint is basically a mechanism that slows down the immune response. By overcoming this checkpoint, by taking these breaks off, we allow the want to kill the cancer to do what they want to do.
Now, looking at some of the assumptions that we have about cancer is one avenue of inquiry in your book. And one thing we think about when we talk about cancer is that, you know, it's, we assume maybe because it's a disease of mutations, when cells mutate, you may get a cancer occurrence, that this is something you're more prone to as you get older. The cancer could be considered a disease of aging. Where are you on that? Is that true?
Well, I might be in the minority in my opinion here, but I think there is a lot more to the story than just mutation theory. Sure, there needs to be certain mutations in order for cancer to occur, but I think those mutations are necessary but not sufficient. What is also necessary is a weakening of the immune system, in my opinion. And I do think that our immune system tends to weaken with age, and the classic example is the chickenpox virus being kept in check for many decades, but coming back when we're in our 50s, 60s, and 70s in the form of shingles because of that waning immunity. That waning immunity might also allow mutated cells to finally get the upper hand. So I do think that while the mutations are necessary, they are not sufficient for cancer to fully express itself. I also think that there are some examples from the animal kingdom that clearly underscore this, such as elephants, who have a lot more cells, a lot more cell divisions, and therefore a lot more mutations than humans could have, yet they don't have cancers as frequently. Whales are far bigger than elephants still, and they live 200 years in some instances. With all those cells, all those cell divisions, there must be a lot of mutations, and therefore they should all get cancer at a very early age. The fact that they don't is very curious.
Dr. Welsh, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was Dr. James Welsh. His book is called Sharks Get Cancer, Mole Rats Don't, and he'll be speaking at a Room of One's Own bookstore in Madison this Sunday, June 5th at 2 o'clock.
Coming up, it's Food Friday. This is Central Time.